produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Friday, March 14th, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, and this is your Normal Daily Audio Stash. You can always follow up on any of the stories we cover here on the Daily Audio Stash by visiting the Stash blog at stash.normal.org. We'll have links to the complete news stories, links to the websites of the people we interview, and links and downloads of all the music we play. Plus, you can comment and communicate with other fans of the Stash by leaving your opinions in our comments section. It's the news, it's the music, it's the interviews by, for, and about the cannabis community at the blog that only Normal can deliver, your Stash blog at stash.normal.org. Friday is Cannabis Community Day on the Stash, and coming up after the news, we're speaking with one of our great campus activists, Stacia Cosner from the University of Maryland, who tells us her story of being forbidden to run for re-election to the Student Senate because of her outspoken leadership in fighting to end adult marijuana prohibition. Next, Cannabis Carrie brings us some music from the Tentacles with their song Ganja Computer. And I gotta say, as a 20-year IT professional, I can't wait to upgrade to that operating system. Then we wrap things up with Dr. Rick Doblin from the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, or MAPS, and his take on the recent Salvia is the new pot scaremongering that we told you about this week. So sit back and relax with your favorite strain and enjoy your Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Ninth Circuit Court limits employment drug testing. Now this story comes from my neck of the woods up here in Oregon, where the Woodburn City Library required mandatory drug screens of candidates for part-time library jobs because, you know, nothing's more dangerous than a high librarian. San Francisco, California. A city can't require all job applicants to be tested for narcotics and must instead show why drug use in a particular job would be dangerous, a federal appeals court ruled Thursday. The city was sued by Janet Lanier, whose job offer as a part-time page at the city library was withdrawn in 2004 when she refused a drug and alcohol test. A federal judge ruled the policy unconstitutional and awarded Lanier $12,400 in damages and $44,000 in legal fees, her lawyer said. Federal courts have upheld mandatory drug screening for jobs in which performance, quote, may pose a great danger to the public, end quote, the appeals judges said. They cited Supreme Court rulings allowing drug testing of railroad crews after accidents and of custom agents who search others for illegal drugs. But the Ninth Circuit Court said Woodburn's rationale for universal screening, that drug use is a serious social problem affecting the performance of any job, was rejected by the Supreme Court in 1997 when it struck down Georgia's requirement that all candidates for public office undergo narcotics testing to show their commitment to the war on drugs. The Supreme Court said the state was requiring testing for purely symbolic reasons, which was not enough to avoid the constitutional requirement that a search warrant be based on evidence of wrongdoing. The same reasoning applies to a city's drug testing of applicants for everyday jobs with no connection to safety or security, Judge Pamela Reimer said in the 3-0 ruling. Nonviolent Offender Rehabilitation Act in California. The Drug Policy Alliance Network is sponsoring a ballot measure in California that represents the biggest sentencing and prison reform in United States history. The Nonviolent Offender Rehabilitation Act, or NORA, is unprecedented in scope and magnitude. It will transform California's dysfunctional $10 billion a year prison system, reversing its rampant and costly expansion. NORA will, within just a few years, reduce by tens of thousands the number of people unjustly and unnecessarily incarcerated, while maintaining public safety. At the same time, it will provide a comprehensive model for a public health approach to substance abuse. Success in California will transform the drug policy reform landscape nationwide. At a time when 1 in 100 adult Americans is in prison, California faces a prison overcrowding crisis that may be the worst in the nation. The system is at 175% of capacity. This is due in large part to excessive incarceration of nonviolent offenders, many of whom are drug law violators. Overcrowding has been exacerbated by the state's failure to provide meaningful recidivism reduction programs, including addiction treatment and other rehabilitation services. Washington State High Court says random school drug testing is unconstitutional. Olympia, Washington. The state Supreme Court ruled Thursday that random drug testing of student-athletes is unconstitutional, finding that each has a, quote, genuine and fundamental privacy interest in controlling his or her own bodily functions, end quote. The court ruled unanimously in favor of some parents and students in the lower Columbia River town of Cathlamet, who were fighting the school district's policy of random urine tests of middle school and high school student-athletes. The High Court wrote, quote, "We can conceive of no way to draw a principled line permitting drug testing only student-athletes. If we were to allow random drug testing here, what prevents school districts from either later drug testing students participating in any extracurricular activities, as federal courts now allow, or testing the entire student population?" End quote. Justice Richard Sanders wrote for the court's plurality. Joining him were Chief Justice Jerry Alexander and Justices Susan Owens and Tom Chambers. Quote, "In particular, the school district has failed to show that a suspicion-based regime of drug testing is inadequate to achieve its legitimate objectives," end quote, Justice Barbara Madsen wrote. Madsen wrote that if there is not an observable drug testing problem in the school, then, quote, "the school's interest in detecting drug use does not justify non-consensual drug testing," end quote. She wrote that if drug use is a problem, then schools have the individualized suspicion necessary to require a drug test. Thus, it is difficult to see how a suspicionless drug testing program is necessary, she wrote. Well, hooray for the Pacific Northwest. Well, yeah, I'm biased. It's nice when your state constitution provides you more privacy protections than the United States Constitution. Just ask the people of Alaska, where personal possession of less than 1 ounce of cannabis at home and growing less than 25 plants at home is protected as a privacy right. I particularly like Justice Madsen's common sense opinion. If you can't see a drug problem, then there's no need to test randomly. And if you can see a drug problem, then you'll know who to test. So there's no need to test randomly.
Marijuana is an addictive drug, which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face-to-face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
All right, well, you know how we keep track of the reefer madness here on the Daily Audio Stash, and if you haven't followed the war on certain British subjects using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs that's going on across the pond, then you're missing some reefer madness reminiscent of the days of Harry J. Anslinger and warnings of marijuana being more frightening than Frankenstein and the devil's tool to make the Negroes kill white men and rape white women. The tactics are very familiar. Anslinger took cannabis and hemp, which almost every early 20th century American knew to be a common medication and a source of rope and canvas, and rebranded it marijuana. That way, he and his buddy, William Randolph Hearst, could spread sensationalist lies about cannabis in Hearst's newspapers, and the scary, Mexican-sounding word helped frighten people about weed in a way that scaremongering on cannabis and hemp would not. But the British version of this, happening right now in the 21st century, is to rebrand the popular herb as skunk, with the addition of the scaremongering, "this ain't your father's pot" type of rhetoric. You know, you've heard the lines, skunk is 50 times more potent than the ganja of the 60s. And this time, it's not the Negroes coming to hurt Whitey, but rather the patently false claim that skunk triggers psychosis and schizophrenia. Now here's a typical article from the Argus in the UK.
A mother, driven insane by cannabis, stabbed herself repeatedly through the chest with a carving knife after claiming she was spoken to by a dog. Julie Cross told friends the animal was trying to tell her something before picking up the 5-inch blade and ramming it at least 5 times into her chest and abdomen. An inquest was told the former receptionist from Goring used speed and cannabis on a daily basis, and in the weeks running up to her death had slashed her wrists and smeared her blood across a crucifix and also hung a noose from her attic.
Cannabis and speed? Do you think perhaps maybe the speed had more to do with the psychosis? Now that's a link that has substantial basis in research and plenty of anecdotal evidence that I'll testify to as a former club musician who's seen his share of tweakers. And yet, the headline is, "Cannabis smoking mum stabbed herself to death." Nothing about the speed. It continues.
Katie Leeson, spokeswoman for the mental health charity Rethink, said the case further proved that cannabis causes severe mental illness. Quote, "We don't believe there is any doubt about it now. There is a proven link between the drug and psychosis," end quote, said Ms. Leeson.
A mental health charity asserting that the use of the most popular illicit substance will create more clients for a mental health charity. Interesting. Let's continue.
The hearing at Worthing Town Hall was told that Ms. Cross from Limerick Lane had drug-induced psychosis diagnosed in 2006. It had led to her spending much of her last year in and out of the Millview Psychiatric Hospital. The inquest heard that during what was described as a very difficult life, Ms. Cross had made repeated attempts on her own life, starting at the age of 14.
Okay, so then she's been diagnosed with drug-induced psychosis at age 39, yet she's been actively suicidal since age 14. Well, yeah, it's got to be the cannabis. Oh, excuse me, I mean the skunk that did it. Even though they didn't have skunk back in 1981 when she first attempted suicide. Well, the article doesn't mention whether she smoked cannabis since age 14, but I kind of doubt it. So this is the kind of reefer madness that is going on across the pond. Cannabis-smoking mum stabs herself to death. Nothing about the speed, blaming it on the pot.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. More than 500,000 Americans are arrested each year for smoking pot. These are ordinary citizens like you and me whose lives and careers are being needlessly destroyed. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
All right, well, we're back on the Daily Audio Stash here, and we're heading out to the East Coast to the University of Maryland, and one of our fine college activists out here is Stacia Costner, who's the president of the Students for Sensible Drug Policy chapter there at the University of Maryland. The website is ssdpterps.org. That's ssdpterps.org. We'll have a link for that on our sidebar at our website, stash.normal.org. And Stacia, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me, Russ.
Well, I hope everything's going well for you. I had received an email that kind of described your plight down there at the University of Maryland. Now, like I said, you're the president of SSDP down there. You're a vice chair on the SSDP board of directors. So you're, you know, intimately involved with fighting against this war on marijuana. Let's just kind of fill your listeners in on what happened with you and your university senate.
Sure. Last year, in 2007, I ran for the University Senate, which is the strongest, most influential policymaking body on our campus here at University of Maryland. So I'm a representative from the College of Arts and Humanities. It's according to the major, and I represent 1,000 students in the College of Arts and Humanities on the Senate that governs the University of Maryland.
And what are the duties of the Student Senate? What are they in control of there at the university?
Well, they supposedly are the most influential, the top policy-making body on campus that is democratically elected. So, you know, if we're going to add a new major, that would all go through the University Senate, of which I'm part.
Okay. So this is no little, you know, we're not talking student council from junior high here. We're talking you guys have the power of the purse. You can control how the money is spent. You can control a little bit about how the college curriculum is run. So this is a pretty important Senate we're talking about, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, we, you know, and it's 10% students for a reason. You know, it's 90% faculty because the faculty would like to have, you know, the most say in most of the policies that actually affect a day-to-day life here at the University of Maryland. I got myself elected to the Committee on Committees last summer, and then while on the Committee on Committees, I appointed myself to the Student Conduct Committee, which is a committee within the Senate that is composed of faculty and students, about 4 students, about 10 faculty, and they are charged with reviewing and making amendments to the Code of Student Conduct, which is what I was really concerned with from the beginning, because the sanctions are so harsh on students who are caught with a small amount of marijuana on campus because of our zero tolerance policy. They say, you know, no drugs anywhere at any time, and if you're caught with any amount of any drugs, no matter what the situation is, then you usually will be suspended from the university, will be terminated from your housing, you'll have to find alternative housing, do a host of other sanctions, and then, you know, try to live your life and get back into the university if you can.
So basically the idea here is zero tolerance because I guess under their rationale, they would say that cannabis is an illegal drug, and if you're caught with an illegal drug, you're breaking the law and you shouldn't get the benefits that the students who follow the rules should get. Every time I hear a story like this, I always have one question. I'll just run it by you here. What happens to a student who's under the age of 21 who's caught with alcohol?
Slap on the wrist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that our chapter of SSDP and our chapter of Normal here on campus, that's something that we started out working on. It was in 2006, we got a referendum question on the SGA ballot, the student government elections ballot here on campus. And we got a question that asked students if they think that the sanctions for getting caught with marijuana on campus should be reduced so that they're no more punitive than the current sanctions given to students caught underage drinking on campus. We got a resounding 65% yes vote on that referendum question on the ballot. But then this whole process was catalyzed because I met with one of the deans here on campus who basically told me that referendum had nothing but symbolic power and that they weren't going to change any of the policies or any of their practices with regards to student discipline and marijuana on campus. So, you know, I've been meeting with different people on campus, different administrators, so I got myself on the Senate to see if I could make some change there. And then I had been working on this marijuana alcohol equalization issue when I decided to put through another bill that has to do with student drug use, and that's the Good Samaritan bill. And that would allow for students to know that they would not be prosecuted or held judicially accountable for calling 911 when themselves or a friend is overdosing on drugs or alcohol.
Oh.
And that's kind of the policy that we've been talking about within the Senate all semester, and kind of the reason why such controversy has arisen from my wanting to run for re-election.
Well, let's get to that issue. You're currently serving out your term, so you're currently on the Senate. Is they're going to prevent you from running for re-election? Is that correct?
They are. They're chalking it up to an oversight last year in the process because, as you know, I am currently serving as a senator. I was allowed to run and be elected a year ago to the position that I'm in currently. And then when I put in my application to run for re-election, they told me 2 days before election started that I was ineligible because of my disciplinary standing. And that, you know, that is something that hasn't changed whatsoever in the past year. It's no different today than it was when I was elected a year ago. But, you know, since it slipped through the cracks last year, they are catching it, if you will, this year and refusing to put my name on the ballot for Senate reelection.
Well, Stacey, you sound like a nice person. What in the world could your disciplinary standing be concerning?
Well, When I was a freshman, I was living in a dorm, one of the 500 person plus freshman dorms that we have on campus here at University of Maryland. And it was my second semester. It was actually the night before the first day of classes, my winter semester, when I was a freshman. And I was smoking marijuana in the dorm, and that is against the rules, and I am fully hold myself accountable for my actions. But so I was smoking with a friend, and it was a Tuesday night of about midnight, and then we heard a knock on the door, and then I answered the door because we don't have peepholes and that's anything to ask because it was, you know, a friendly dorm, 500 kids live there, chances are it's probably just a friend. So I answered the door, it was three cops, they berated me with questions about the smell of marijuana, and it's all over the hallway, and we know you have so much, like, you need to give us everything that you've got, or else it's going to be so hard for you. And I was just terrified. I didn't know any of my rights. I didn't know, you know, they needed to get, I didn't know what the criteria were for a search warrant or probable cause or anything like that. So they came into my room. They kept berating me with questions, and finally I just waived my rights, which was a poor thing to do. It was a horrible example, but I waived my rights. I gave them the contraband that I had, which turned out to be less than half a gram of marijuana and a glass pipe. And I gave it to the police. They arrested me. They took me to the Hyattsville Jail in Prince George's County for the night. And then I got released on the personal recognizance by the commissioner in the morning. And I had to walk back to campus. And then when I got back there, there was a host of sanctions and judicial processes that I had to go through because of this. And I was terminated of my housing. My housing was terminated on campus. So they told me that I couldn't live there anymore. I had 48 hours to get out to find another place, and that I was on suspension withheld, which means if you screw up even in the slightest regard over the next 2 years of me being a student at the University of Maryland, I would have been suspended. So that also included random drug testing, for which I had to call in a hotline every Monday and Thursday morning, listen to the recording, and if my number was on the recording, I had to go and give a urine sample by 5 p.m. that evening. And if the urine sample was diluted or if it tested positive for any drugs, then I would have been suspended. So that's what I did for almost 18 months until I petitioned to have my drug testing terminated. But my disciplinary probation persists on my record. So when they went to check to see if I was eligible to run again for the Senate, they saw that I was on disciplinary probation for this incident back in January 2006, and they're citing that as the reason why they're refusing to put my name on the ballot.
Wow. So did they not check when you first ran for Senate, or was it just an oversight on their part?
They're chalking it up to an oversight, a mistake.
Hmm. Wow. Although it would seem a lot to me here, just as a cynical, jaded, middle-aged guy, that what's probably going on here is they didn't mind you running when they thought they had slapped you down and turned you around. But once you started speaking up and trying to educate others and change things, you became a little bit of a thorn in their side. That's just my opinion, but that's what it sounds like.
That's exactly what our student newspaper, the Diamondback, that's exactly what the staff editorial expressed when they wrote their opinion in the paper. I think it was yesterday. And they were, you know, they're completely supporting me and, you know, calling for the inequity in the policy to be changed and, you know, for some action to be taken, but none has been taken as of yet.
Well, that's just amazing. And you know, this happens, you know, a lot of activists get tried by fire. You know, they end up in the criminal justice system, or in your case, you know, talking about the college justice system, I guess it would be. And rather than turn people away from, drugs or trying to, stand up for their rights, it actually makes you more active and more willing to go out there because you've seen the injustice and you don't want that to happen to anyone else. So, Stacia, thank you for joining us on the Stash here. Stacia Costner is the president of the SSDP chapter, that's Students for Sensible Drug Policy, at the University of Maryland. Check out the website, ssdpterps.org, and also schoolsnotprisons.com. And, Stacia, thank you so much for telling us your story.
Thank you. I would just encourage anyone listening to, you know, get involved with their local Normal or SSDP chapter to help us end this
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. All right, welcome to Friday and the weekend. It's going to be a long weekend, 4-day weekend for the people that are celebrating St. Patrick's Day, which comes up on Monday. So to get you kicked off for the weekend, we're going to take a deep puff of today's track called Ganja Computer by the Tentacles. Hip-hop, trip-hop, psychedelic, whatever you call today's music, it will groove you to your soul and have you humming the lyrics all weekend. With a killer bass line, funky lyrics, and a bit of electronica, the Tentacles have me convinced that I do, in fact, have a ganja computer. Well known in the underground New York music scene, members Sam Kreese and Peter Terriberry are artists in every sense of the word. They have an online and traveling art show called MODA, the Museum of Drunken Art, filled with all the weird and wonderful art they create and collect. Look them up on their MySpace page and make sure you add this track to your next party mixtape. We'll have a link to the MySpace page up on our website, stash.normal.org. And for more information on this artist, you can always look up music.podshow.com. And to download this song, again, check out our blog at stash.normal.org. This is the Tentacles and Ganja Computer.
Ganja Computer. Ganja Computer. Ganja Computer.
Chopped and lowered. Check out the seam, drive it slower. Bitches in the back, pick out the seeds. Even the robot has his needs. This machine don't run on gas. This machine's getting high on grass. Packing all hemp floppy disks straight to the brain. Disengage my circuits, I'm feeling strange. Underwater serpents carving ripples through my mind. Look out, bitch, it's collyweed time. Roll the blunt with that kind. This machine don't run on gas. This machine's like getting high on grass. I smoke weed like a ganja computer. Input must get high. I smoke weed like a ganja computer. Input must get high. I smoke weed like a ganja computer. Input must get high.
What's up, guys? This is Miss High Times 2007, and you're chilling with us here at the Normal Podcast.
Now it's time to play Pass the Stash, where you can win cool prizes from Normal.
Don't forget that we're still running our contest, Pass the Stash, and this month's contest is for parents to ask Dr. Mitch Earlywine about how they can talk to their kids about marijuana. Dr. Earlywine has just released his new book, Parents' Guide to Marijuana, and if you send your questions in to 420research@gmail.com, Dr. Earlywine will select the best three questions and answer them on next week's Stash. Those three emails will receive copies of Dr. Earlywine's Parents' Guide to Marijuana. So get your emails in now at 420research@gmail.com and pass the stash.
Yeah, this 10 individuals.
Yeah.
And we just want y'all to know that weed helps, you know what I'm saying? So I just want y'all to stop messing with the people who need it to live. It's helping people out there with cancer, AIDS, you know what I'm saying? So y'all gotta let it be, man. Legalize this.
Well, Here on the Stash, we are proud to be speaking with Dr. Rick Doblin, who is the president of the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, which you can find them on the internet at maps.org. They've been studying the use of psychedelics and marijuana for years now and have lots of scientific research to back them up. So, Dr. Doblin, thanks for being here.
Sure, my pleasure.
Rick, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you this morning had to do with this new scaremongering headline I had seen that proclaimed, "Is salvia the new pot?" And they're talking about the salvia divinorum that a lot of people may not know about. So could you just explain to our listeners, what is salvia divinorum?
Well, the first thing we can say is that it is not the new pot.
Okay.
And I think that headline was, in a way, trying to show that, you know, police action by criminalizing things will nip something in the bud and, you know, make what could be this massive new drug into something that is very minor, and that we've got, you know, a tremendous way of solving problems by criminalizing things. So I think that's all sort of encased in that, is salvia the new pot. Now, salvia has been used for a very long time, possibly thousands of years, for spiritual purposes, Central America, Mexico. Divinorum is what it's really called, salvia divinorum, with the idea that it helps people to see the future. So it's been used in this kind of religious context, and it does produce an altered state of consciousness. It's an herb. It can be used in multiple different ways. It can be smoked. It can be chewed. It can be made into a liquid and swished in one's mouth. Not so great to swallow, and not even so great to swish because it tastes terrible, but it has different effects, like most things do, according to the route of administration. And it's been a mystery for a while about, you know, how it actually works. And it's an agonist of the kappa opiate system. It's a single receptor, as far as we can tell. Brian Roth and others of the National Institute of Mental Health Psychoactive Drug Screening Program have figured out, with Daniel Siebert, who's probably the, you know, world expert. Sagewisdom.com is his website. And it's got a profound effect when it's smoked. Salvinorin A is the active ingredient. It's very disorienting when it's smoked. It's not something that is directly similar to major psychedelics like psilocybin or mescaline or even DMT. It's closest to DMT in some ways. It's very profound. Lasts 10, 15 minutes when you smoke it. People tend to talk about merging into inanimate objects. You lose your personality, you become the floor, you become the chair. And it has this feeling for most people that it's just strange, not that it's useful, that it's just strange.
So this is quite different then from the intoxicating effects of cannabis then?
Yeah, I mean, this whole idea that it's possibly the next marijuana, it has nothing to resemble it really in any significant way. That was just total hype. Nor is it, with marijuana, there's a sort of flow of consciousness. There's a certain element of creativity. This is stronger than marijuana in that sense, in that you're more removed from who you are, more removed from normal consciousness. It's not as useful in that sense. It's really more, strange, I guess.
But it sounds like it's more of a shamanistic sort of used for those sorts of religious rites and such, and not so much for a recreational intoxicant.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm talking about with smoking it, though. Okay, so when you take leaves and you chew them, or people make liquid and extracts and then swish it around and absorb the salvinorin A under their mouth, like actually Sativex, the marijuana extract.
Right.
Made by GW Pharmaceuticals, that's meant to be absorbed under the tongue. That's also a route of administration for salvia. And then it's different. It's longer acting, milder, more emotionally opening. And there was about 10 years ago, we actually were sponsoring a study with it in Vancouver area, where a group of Quaker meditators, now legal, so that we're becoming illegal, but it was legal then, and it's still legal in many places right now. It's only illegal in some states, not federally illegal yet. But they were using it as part of Quaker meditation. And we actually had placebo salvia that still retained the same kind of terrible taste, but had been washed to remove the salvinorin A. And it was felt that it deepened people's sense of listening, sense of quiet, an emotional opening, and it permitted people to make more profound comments and participation with this Quaker meditation context. So with all drugs, really, it's the relationship that one establishes with the drug that really counts. Mm-hmm. And it's how it's used and how it's channeled rather than what is it in and of itself. That's our big mistake in terms of drug policy. We tend to focus on the drug does this or that, and we ignore the relationship. That's why we can say this is a bad drug and they're all use is abuse, things like that. But in a Quaker meditation context, where people are taking moderate doses, doing it orally, chewing leaves or using the oil extract and keeping it under their tongue for a while, that it does have a valuable experience that it offers people, because it's centering, focuses on the here and now, emotionally opening, and a certain flow to consciousness, and it was proven to be very helpful. Unfortunately, the fellow that was doing the study, his wife got cancer and he had to stop, didn't have the time anymore, so the study was never completed, and since then we've not done any research with it at all. It's not something that we think is likely to have therapeutic applications in the same way that marijuana does, or that MDMA does, or, you know, LSD even, or psilocybin. It's not going to be very popular. There's not a whole lot of people that really like it. It's being used now in part because of the drug war. The drug war itself has contributed to the popularity of it, because it's still legal. You know, other things have been criminalized, so people look around for something that's legal. You know, the common idea of this is that it's mostly young people that are using it, where I think that the people that have found a good relationship with it and found it to be beneficial are mostly older and more experienced psychoactive users.
Okay.
But it's being, you know, marketed under all sorts of different ways, and it's attracting attention, and it can be disorienting, and people can have disturbing experiences from it and end up, you know, feeling emotionally worse off. It's not toxic in this kind of way that you sometimes hear of other drugs.
So there's no overdose risk, you know, or fatal injury from the use of the drug?
No. What we say here is that we have to distinguish between physiological toxicity and psychological toxicity.
Okay.
So physiological toxicity, it's not a risk. Psychological toxicity is an issue, particularly where it's smoked.
Because of its strong, is it a hallucinogen? Is that fair to call it?
Yeah, because it's just, most people do it end up with their eyes closed, though, you know, when they smoke it. It's rare that somebody will smoke it and wander around.
Okay.
You know, similar with DMT, that when you smoke DMT, it's pretty overwhelming in the sense that you don't really process information in the same way. You know, it's hard to be mobile, actually.
Yeah.
And figuring out keeping your balance and things like that. It's extremely strong in a smoked way.
I see. So don't make any plans, in other words.
Okay. Yeah, and I think the, but, you know, people are sometimes benefited from looking at the world in a different way. And even if it doesn't seem like it's going to be therapeutically useful, it has been used to produce a change of perspective. So you could say it's useful for creativity. But I think that there is a serious and profound potential for it in the oral forms, and there are people that find it quite useful and quite opening and quite spiritual, you know, connects one in sort of a broader consciousness. So I think that it's sad commentary on our culture that, you know, the official response is not to really try to foster informal social controls as the alternative to criminalization and prohibition. That our knee-jerk reaction is, okay, you know, here's a situation. People are seeking out certain experiences with this substance, and we don't understand it, so let's make it illegal.
Right.
And then let's try to fill the jails even more. You know, meanwhile, they create all the problems with prohibition, they create illegal markets, which all the attendant problems with that.
Yeah.
So that we've got something that, we've got a culture that's disconnected in a lot of ways from spirituality, that is trashing the planet in a lot of ways, and people need to be more connected. So there's something, you know, healthy about this urge of altering one's consciousness to move from just individual identification to a broader social identification, and broader identification with life itself. And so there's something underneath a healthy initiative. Now, you know, there's a fair amount of kids that are just would sniff glue, would do anything, just to look at the world in a different way. And are we giving them any guidance or giving them any protection by criminalizing things? I don't think so.
Yeah.
And as far as whether this is the next marijuana that society is now being saved from because our, you know, fortunate law enforcement forces have decided to you know, step in and criminalize. Well, that's never going to happen in this ridiculous concept.
Well, we'll keep our eye on this whole salvia divinorum situation. Like you said, it's not federally prohibited yet, but many states are moving to criminalize its possession and use. So we'll keep up with that. And if anybody would like some more information on salvia divinorum or other psychedelic studies, check out the website at MAPS.org for the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. We'll have a link up on our website, stash.normal.org. And again, we want to thank Dr. Rick Doblin, who's the president of MAPS, for joining us today. Thanks for being here, Rick.
Yes, I'm also on the board of Normal.
Oh, yes.
And proud to be one board member.
Oh, excellent.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you with today's cannabis quote from Allen Ginsberg, activist. Quote, "Marijuana is a useful catalyst for specific optical and aural aesthetic perceptions. I apprehended the structure of certain pieces of jazz and classical music in a new manner under the influence of marijuana, and these apprehensions have remained valid years of normal consciousness," end quote. Or to put it simply, weed makes music better. I'm Radical Russ. Have yourself a great weekend, and thanks for downloading The Stash. We'll see you later, and remember, take care of each other.